The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Shaka Hislop. And look at this, ladies and gentlemen. How did that happen? Nader Manua is with us as well. As we kick things off in the Premier League at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea with a 1-0 victory over Newcastle. Kai Havertz scored an absolute worldie right at the end to give Chelsea all 3 points. Some, though, felt he should have been sent off earlier in the match for the elbow. However, it was just a yellow card. Newcastle also denied what looked like a clear penalty as well. But in the end, Chelsea with the win. And of course, it solidifies their place third in the table, 8 points ahead of Arsenal, who we'll talk about in a moment. But first, let's welcome in, shall we, Frank Lepuff and Steve Nicol. Stevie, Chelsea deserve this or no?
Ooh, I think if you're Newcastle, you're disappointed you didn't get a point. Yes, it was an incredible goal that won the game, but Newcastle were very close on two or three occasions. As with Chelsea. So I would have suggested the right result was a draw. You know, the two things for this game are Newcastle have had a heart transplant. I mean, is this really the same team or the same club that not too long ago looked as though it was scared to go on the field? There were like a bunch of kittens running around. They couldn't defend. They were throwing goals away and they couldn't score a goal. All of a sudden, you've got a team that actually believes. They're not scared of anybody. They get after it. And so they'll feel unlucky. But let's be honest, this goal that Havertz scored, I don't think there's another player that's kicked a ball that would have finished this better. I mean, ball comes over his shoulder, little tickle with a left peg to take the pace off it, and as it bounces up, puts it away. I mean, it was just incredible. And I hope they've shown it for a long, long time. So, in the end, because it's such a good goal, I guess Chelsea will say they deserved it. But honestly, I thought a point each would have been fair.
It's Dennis Bergkamp-esque, wasn't it, Frank? And you were one of the loudest critics of Kai Havertz when he initially joined Chelsea. Obviously now a key part in this run that they're on.
Yes. He is, and I mean, it's a situation where you always win as a pundit because you can be critical when the guy is not good and say, well, you know what, I was right because I knew that he was capable of doing what he's capable of, what he's showing us right now. And that's the truth because I saw, it's the truth for the situation for me because it's what I saw when I was saw him playing for his German team and I didn't see at first when he was playing for Chelsea. Now we see the real Havertz, the guy who can finish. We have that finesse when he touches the ball, when he controls the ball like he did, when he scored the goal, and the influence he has on the team at front that Chelsea is desperate right now because of the lack of consistency of performances from Lukaku or Werner or some others. Havertz is the main man right now, and I'm very pleased. And again, I've been critical towards him because I knew he could reach that level, and he does.
Is Frank somehow making this about him? As an inspiration to Kai Havertz.
Doesn't he always? is the question?
Nadim, red card or not? Should he have even been on the pitch for this?
So I think it's a red card, but the reason I think that is, as the ball's coming up, like I was caught in two minds initially because he was always looking at the ball. So as he's going for it, he's doing what he would do, assuming that he's just going for the ball and contested. But I think there's a thing where if you saw that you're going to be contesting it with somebody, maybe you go for it in a different manner. So that's like the one where the ball's up in the air, someone tries to control it really high with their foot, but they go into somebody. Just because they were only looking at the ball doesn't mean it's not a red card.
Right.
And I think if they knew somebody was there, they'd try and do it differently. So I guess for me, it would be a red card because he's not really taking into account the full sort of severity of what the challenge could be if he went for it. So I think overall, it's probably a red card for me.
And watching the game, they showed it from an angle that was pretty much pitch height. And so you could see Havertz and that left arm exactly how high up it came. And once I saw it from that angle, that removed any doubt in my mind as to whether it should be right.
Like, I don't think he's intended to do it, but I think if he knew the player was there, he wouldn't jump up in the same
manner. I think he intended.
Stevie?
I think.
No, I'm happy with a yellow. He's jumping with a guy who's 16 foot tall. He's going to have to use his arms all he can to try and get up there to try and compete. I just think that sometimes there are situations where there's a possibility somebody's going to get hurt, whether it's a challenge in the air or a challenge on the ground. And we have to accept that sometimes it just happens. There was no intent whatsoever. And again, they've taken this intent out of the law, which I think is ridiculous, because it's a physical sport. Sometimes people are going to get hurt, and it depends on how the situation. I don't think Havertz looks for him at all. I think he's put his arms up to try and get as much lift as he can. And quite frankly, it could very easily have been the other way around. So I was quite happy with a yellow.
Frank?
Yes, I'm happy too, and I will advise my colleague on the with you, Dan, to just read the rules about that, you know, because that's controversial in a way. So if it's not if he doesn't want to do it, if it's not done on purpose, you know, and if it's an accident, it's a yellow card. But if you get the safety of the opponent and you feel that the opponent is endangered, then it's a red card. I consider that Byrne is not endangered because he carried on, because his safety wasn't endangered because he carried on. So therefore, it's only a yellow card. It's just the rule. I thought at first, you know, if it's an elbow, it's straight a red card. No, it's not. It depends the intention, and the intention was more to go up in the air to protect himself and to try to win the ball, and I'm pretty sure he didn't do it on purpose. And then the safety of the player wasn't endangered because he carried on. Therefore, you only have a yellow card.
Dan Burns is a tough guy. He's a tough guy. So maybe that's why.
I can't believe we've got a big, hard, tough, rugged centre-back crying because I'm just centre-forward.
Stevie, all I'm saying, because I said I don't think he intended to do it because he was solely looking at the ball. But I feel like if he would have been able to see who was contesting with it, he would have jumped differently. Because, like, I can't separate that from, like, the high boot one when you know somebody's not tried to kick someone in the face, but they'll kick somebody in the face. But they were thinking, let me just take it down or whatever. Would you call that a red, even if somebody played on?
I would agree with you. If he sees him coming and challenges in a certain way that he catches him with his elbow and his head, then yes, it's a red. But the fact is he didn't see him coming. He was going for it. He was trying to get as much height as he could. He had his arms for protection, as we all should. And so that's, again, why it's a yellow card.
Arsenal move 1 point ahead of Manchester United into fourth in the table after a 2-0 victory over Leicester. It was a comprehensive win, really, for Arteta's side. Thomas Partey opening the scoring early on from a corner, and then Lacazette from the spot making it 2-0 to give Arsenal three more points. Hey, after a poor start to the season, Stevie, Arsenal got it together at exactly the right time, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely, big time. You know, I'm sitting thinking after the game and I'm going, you know, if we were to talk about how should a top four side play against a mid-table Premier League side at home, and you'd say, well, they should be dominating the game, they should be dominating possession, they should be creating chances, and they should be scoring goals. It's exactly what Arsenal did.
Yep.
We've been crying for long enough that nobody wants the top four spot. Because they're inconsistent. Are they any better than anybody else? Well, Arsenal showed in this game that they deserve to be in the fourth spot. They've been consistent. And again, as I said, that's what should happen. A mid-table Premier League side going to a team sitting in fourth place in the Premier League should get done. And absolutely, Arsenal done them. I think Arsenal are maybe three or four signings away from maybe competing with the teams above them.
Wow.
Because I think so. I mean, that for so long we've absolutely hammered them on how bad the signings they've made. Well, they've made two fantastic signings in my opinion. That's Ramsdale, who nobody saw this. It must be the best $30 million they've ever spent. And Ben White, after a sticky start, absolutely is holding things together. So, listen, if they can get a goal-scoring centre-forward, somebody else in the middle apart from Xhaka, and a right-back, proper players, they can compete with the certainly Chelsea, and maybe give City and Liverpool a scare.
Wow. Praise indeed, Frank. Do you agree?
I do agree. I think it's time to give a credit to Mikel Arteta. I mean, the job he has done with the youngest team in the Premier League is absolutely fantastic. I mean, the switch of the player, as you mentioned, you know, from the beginning of the season and what we see now is huge. I mean, I feel them sharp, connected, really compact, working together, going forward, having creativity in every department. And yes, Ramsdale, everybody was laughing at him when he signed for Arsenal. What kind of signing is that? The guy has always been relegated every club he signed for. The guy is magical. And we almost forgot the name of the former goalkeeper.
Bernd Leno.
And White is doing the job. you see Lacazette, you know, working as a skipper, as I said last week already. I mean, everything is perfect in a perfect world right now, and they are the team who deserve the most to be in the fourth spot this season if they carry on like that. Now, having said that, don't forget that they don't have any European campaign, so they can rest in between. I want to see midweek. They're going to play against Liverpool. So we're going to see if they have the time to rest, to recover, and to be competitive against a top team.
Were you pulling a face at the penalty?
What do you mean?
You thought it was a penalty as well, yeah?
It was the red card situation. Like, what do you want him to do? Like,
want him to keep his hands down.
But his arm was up before the guy even headed the shot.
Yeah. Well,
so he took, like...
Because his arm was already up before the ball was even headed.
So you can't just run around like this.
So I'm saying, just keep your arms in a natural position. You can't just take your arm off.
Ridiculous.
Shaka, I just have one thing to say. Okay, maybe it's a red card situation, maybe it's a penalty. The guy who saved on the line was Thomas, I think. I think he saved on the line, even if the player touched the ball and put the ball a little bit more central, so that therefore more difficult for the players to get the ball. If the player, I think the Turkish player, wouldn't have touched the ball, it would have been easier for Thomas to kick the ball out. So I think it wasn't a situation of he's going to score if he doesn't touch the ball with his hand.
No.
That's why I'm wonder what is the rule about that. I just say, okay, it's a handball. Okay, you can decide it's a penalty, maybe, because that's the rule. But it doesn't mean that without the hand, it would have scored.
Stevie?
Say that again, Frank.
Okay.
Arsenal, then get
Let's say the player who saved on the line would have saved the ball without the hand.
Forget it. Let it go.
Arsenal then with a 2-0 win, a big victory for them. Meanwhile, at the bottom of the table, some huge results for those trying to get out of the relegation zone. Watford with a win against Southampton. Meanwhile, Everton losing at home against Wolves. But the real drama of the day happened at Elland Road, Leeds against Norwich. It looked like Leeds completely shot themselves in the foot after dominating this game. It was 1-1, but a late winner would see them get 3 points. Jesse Marsh's first win, of course, in charge of Leeds. This was an extraordinary, last 6 or 7 minutes, Stevie?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, Leeds do everything to lose the game. Everything. Even though they lose a goal in the 90th minute, they still keep going, as we know they do. And then they get themselves ahead. So in the 96th minute, Krul, the goalkeeper, goes up for a free kick. It's going to be the last touch of the game, the last thing that happens in the game. Krul ends up putting Timo Pukki through with a little lob over the back. Timo Pukki's got a chance to score and hits it at Moulier. It's like Leeds do everything to try and lose. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. But you know what? It's a win, but they can't afford to keep doing this. They should have been gone. It should have been 3-0 for Leeds at half time. As I said previously, I'm not sure where the goals are coming from. And actually, the first goal they got came off the backside of the opposition. Yes, 3 points, but still a long way to go, but it's a big, big 3 points.
Yeah, exactly, Stevie. A huge day for Leeds. Gives them some hope of salvation. And you're banging on about you're not sure where the goals are coming from.
I just see it in my head how they try and give give games away. It drives me insane. I don't know how Jesse Marsh said you never slept the other night. I don't know how he sleeps any night watching that lot.
But goodness me, Everton are getting themselves into a right old state.
Yeah, Everton are in real trouble and getting sucked in. If teams just continue putting together results. And listen, this was a commanding performance by Wolves. Cody with the goal and Kenny with the goal. It was a simple ball in, recycled from a set piece. And nobody picks up. Cody's the biggest man on the pitch. Nobody gets anywhere near to him. And that's the trouble for me with Everton. When you're down the bottom, at the very least, you have to do the basics right. And Everton are not doing that, and getting themselves in closer and closer to that bottom three, and cause for real concern.
Frank Lampard mentioned this after the game. He said the goal changed everything. Once it conceded the goal, you could just feel it in the stands. Everybody gets nervous. You've been in that situation before.
Yes, unfortunately, I have. Yeah, and it's tough because playing at home should be a pleasure, but when you're not playing well and things are going against you, like you can feel the belief just leave the stadium. And it can become quite hostile. And I think for Everton, as sort of Shaq was alluding to there, they've not done the basics right, but they've not done them right for the whole season. Mm-hmm. They've been gifting teams goals, not taking chances and stuff like this. So when people come to watch them, there's almost like an expectancy that things are going to go wrong. And then when they do, it's like, oh, here we go again. But all these games that are huge, especially at home, like the teams are going to step, like Leeds winning in the last minute of the game. In front, Elland Road, 40,000 people going nuts against a team who's down there with you. That type of energy might kick you on for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Mm. But for Everton, when they arrive into their stadium, it's not a good feeling at the moment. And, you know, that has to change.
How much trouble are they in, Frank?
They're very much in trouble because it's a cycle of games you lose and you keep on losing. And as the guy said, you have your head down. You feel that even the fans don't believe in you anymore, and therefore, as soon as you concede a goal, you know that it's a catastrophe. They have, I think, 3 games in hand to maybe sort their problems out and get out of the of that dangerous situation and dangerous position. But when you are in that mood, and that cycle, it's hard to get out. You know. Well, you know, it can be changed, you see, because they're going to change the stadium. So hopefully, very soon, they can do something and sort out the problem. But it's only going to be next season where they're going to be in Championship or Premier League. That I don't know.
We'll say thank you very much to Frank. He'll be back with us on Extra Time. You can always check that out over on our YouTube channel. We'll say goodbye to Stevie. Until tomorrow. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. PSG move one step closer to claiming the French title with a 3-0 victory over Bordeaux. Mbappe, Neymar and Paredes on the score sheet, but really it wasn't about that. It was about the reception that the team got. In particular, Neymar and Lionel Messi whistled ahead of the game, despite the fact that PSG have a 15-point lead at the top of the table. That is pretty much forgotten, given what happened midweek against Real Madrid. For more on this, Julien Laurent with us, Frank Leboeuf as well. Frank, it really was quite something, wasn't it, to hear Messi whistled in that manner?
Yeah, it is. It is, especially I remember when Messi was welcomed. You know, the game I was at Paris at the Parc des Princes when it was absolutely where everybody was behind him and they was very happy. They were all very happy to see him coming and signing for Paris Saint-Germain. And in another hand, Mbappe was almost booed at the beginning of the season. Everybody thinking that he wanted to go, and that's completely the other way around. But yeah, the players are facing very much unhappy fans with the behavior of the last game. So it's quite normal. It's up to them to return the situation, I would say, to their advantages and do their work. Today, again, it was slow. It was unpassionate. And people are expecting much more from those players.
Jules, if you were there, would you have booed with your PSG ways?
I would have been the loudest, even. I would have booed so much, you would have heard me from Bristol. I mean, listen, it's not nice. It's not nice to be in that position where, whether you're on the pitch or in the stands, where your team just had this collapse in midweek and then you end up with the ultras showing their discontent and their protest. There was tensions before, even before the Real Madrid game, and now it's spilled over after that defeat and the fact that they were knocked out of the Champions League. So of course they were going to protest. We knew they were going to boo and whistle and etc. We knew there would be banners, and there were banners about asking Leonardo to get sacked, Nasser Al-Khelaifi to get sacked as well. So we knew that they would leave before the end of the first half, for example, and empty the two stands as a protest again. So this was all planned, and we kind of knew it. It's just, I think maybe for some people it's surprising, but this happens a lot in Paris, and I think in a lot of grounds too.
What happens next though, Frank? Because the problem is there is a very long time until they can redeem themselves. They're going to win the league. They could beat teams 3-4-0 every weekend, yet it's only in the Champions League really where they're judged properly. So it's going to take a long time, isn't it, for these heels to wound? Wounds to heal?
Well, I think it will take, almost a year until we come back to February next season and see what the Paris Saint-Germain is going to do again in the last 16 or the quarterfinal. That's the main concern. You know, everybody's expecting the best. Every time, every year, you see players like Messi coming, Neymar, and some others, and you say, well, that's maybe this season. And it's always that same thing. There is a very famous journalist from L'Equipe this week, who say that continuing or losing like that every year brings a culture of loss. And you know, and you can be a club with win like Real Madrid, you win, you get the silverware and everything, and you're becoming a club which gonna lose every time, and you're gonna get that culture. So it's like a curse. You have to get rid of the curse, and the only way to get rid of that is to win your first Champions League. And after that you will be forgiven and you will start a new cycle and everything will go well.
Yeah, that's a long way off, though, isn't it? Luis, obviously, you played with Messi. We were so excited when that move happened in August, just to see how he would link up with Neymar once again, Kylian Mbappe up front. I don't think many could have predicted that come March, he'd be booed by his own fans.
Dan, I wasn't very excited, to be honest. I saw Lionel Messi leaving Barcelona, and he hurt me so much. It was sad, actually, to see him part, but definitely, when you have a look as a guy who likes to see as a football fan, let's call it this way, that likes to see nice football, have a look to and have the chance of watching play Neymar, Messi, Mbappe is something. It's a dream come true, and I'm sure that that's what the supporters were feeling. But definitely, it's not the end of what we expected. That in March, actually, a few months after, the supporters just start booing because one of the games didn't go the way that they expected. Because I'm sure that in the first leg, but Messi, for me, was one of the best one on the field with Di Maria, probably, and Verratti. So it's something that at the end, people doesn't understand. You can have bad games, and it happens, and then you continue moving forward. But I agree totally with Sebastian that he's mentioning about this culture of if you get used to lose every single time, at the end it's something that is going to happen. And it happened to Atletico Madrid for many years until they finally got once again a right to the Champions League final, and they didn't manage to win it. But in the other side, they were winning the league. And at the end, you kind of think and feel that they know they make it, maybe they can arrive to the Champions League final, but at the end they're going to lose it. And that's something that I'm sure the club doesn't want to end the play this year.
How does this end, Jules?
Sorry?
How does this end?
I don't know. Today, I mean, Messi never looked phased anyway. So he was booed on his face. There was nothing. On Neymar's face, you could see the frustration after he scored the goal. You saw the frustration, no celebration, nothing. He was the worst because they also insulted him and called him a son of a bee and all of that, which they didn't do for Messi and the other players, by the way, because as you said, apart from Mbappe, everybody else got booed. It was not targeted at Messi or Neymar. It was targeted at the whole team. So it could have been Dan Thomas playing, Xhaka Hislop, Luis Garcia, Franck Leboeuf. You would have been booed as well. It's nothing to do with an individual, really. It's a collective after the Real Madrid defeat. But I don't know, for Neymar, the club is saying, listen, if he wants to go, if we get offers, he can go. No one will, trust me, no one will come for Neymar in the summer. Messi, it's different. I think if Xavi picks up the phone and says, hey, why don't you come home, and it can happen, you know, this one might happen. For Neymar, I don't know who's going to come now and spend the money that he's on, the wages, plus a transfer fee or something like that, at his age and with the form that he has. I think this one will be tricky. But I think everything is pretty open for the manager, for the sporting director, for the president, for Neymar, for Messi, for Kylian. I think there's a lot of uncertainty because after what happened and the situation right now, to be fair, I think we have to say what it is. It is a mess.
Jules saying it looks like Messi's going to go back to Barcelona. Luis, does this make sense?
Yeah. If he wants to go, I'm sure that everybody's going to be happy to have him back again. I'm not sure if he's going to be available. But on the other hand, guys, to find a place to Neymar, I don't think that is to try to find or someone has to find a place to Neymar. I think that Neymar needs to find a new challenge, something that actually he enjoyed, because in the moment that he doesn't enjoy it, I'm not talking about money. People talk about no money, wages and everything. I think he's not worried about that. He's worried about he wants to feel once again important on the field. He wants to enjoy playing on a game, trying to win more trophies. And at the moment, you can see that he's not enjoying the face. The body language doesn't look like so. Hopefully, we can see back again the Neymar that we all see for many years, because definitely it's a joy to watch.
And anyone who's seen the Netflix documentary, now it's all Xhaka Hislop's fault.
Or is it now?
That's what it seems to be.
No. I understand exactly what Luis is saying, but Neymar asked for this. Neymar chose to leave Barcelona. He wanted that challenge where he was the focus. He wanted to be the face of the project. A project that has gone disastrously ever since his arrival, despite how much they spend, despite what managers come in. PSG just aren't delivering on their promise. And now that dream that he seeked out in that manner has turned into a nightmare. It's his endure. And I for one, don't have many sympathies.
It's crazy, isn't it? Mbappe, Neymar, Messi. In August, we were like, wow, yeah. You know, this team's going to dominate. It's going to be must-watch.
Yeah, it seemed like it was perfect, didn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are. I think they start to show a few sort of failings earlier in the season. Like, maybe it's not going to be as perfect as we all saw. But then again, it's like it's the Champions League. It's a very, very competitive, like, task itself. You're going up against Real Madrid, who've got the richest pedigree, I think, of any side in its history. So I think if they would have lost that to, say, like a Sporting Lisbon or something like that, then it's, I think it's, you know, it's a slightly different conversation. Obviously, they blew it, but still, you know, the standard is so high. Like, I think I'm very interested in the point that Frank was making about how there's like a losing culture in that competition within it, and getting to the final and winning it is a way to get rid of it, because you see the way that they've tried to do it with that front three, and it's an incredible front three on paper. But then there's also, you know, it's gone blue again. I'm talking about Man City. Mm-hmm. They don't have that star power like that. They have the collective, but then they've also not won it. So what's the best formula to find success at that sort of stage? Like what is it?
I don't know.
I'm asking you. Tell me the answer to the question. Somebody must know.
Funny, I won't be sat here.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
Exactly. We'll say thank you very much to Jules. Just a reminder, for more from Jules and Gab, be sure to check out the latest edition of their podcast. It drops on Mondays. They'll be talking about everything that's hit the headlines over the weekend.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Marius Wolf's goal in the 21st minute proved to be decisive in Borussia Dortmund's victory over Bielefeld. That closes the gap at the top of the table to 7 points now, with Bayern Munich, of course, dropping points yesterday against Hoffenheim. Dortmund do have a game in hand. More on this. Let's welcome in. Jan Arge Fjortoft is with us. Jan, title race, yes.
Absolutely. We are so excited now. Now they beat Cologne. We have Haaland back. He will score 5 goals a game. And then they go to Munich and they will beat them. And Bayern Munich will lose everything. We're back. We are back. We're so excited in Germany now. After 9 years out of the wilderness, all other teams in Germany, we have a title race. Fantastic.
That is it. That's certainly not tongue-in-cheek. And Dortmund are definitely not going to muck this up, are they, Jan?
No. I think I've seen all home games of Dortmund this season. And it's the same old story. And sometimes I ask myself, am I too critical to them? Because, again, they're playing Bielefeld today. They're winning 1-0. Yes, they hit the post. Yes, they hit the bar. But it's always a danger of them losing a game. But then they end up winning. And so they got a quite good home record. But it was not impressive. And if you see their season now, they're out of the cup, the German cup. They're out of the Champions League in a very easy group. You saw Sporting Lisboa, who they were 4 or 5 points after. They got knocked out big time by Manchester City. So Dortmund hasn't had a good season, but they keep on winning. So they are the challenger to Bayern Munich now. And I guess that Thomas Müller and Lewandowski, they can't even sleep now when I think of how close Dortmund is coming.
Haaland coming on, of course, as a second half substitute. How did your boy look?
He did. He looked okay. I mean, he'd been out for 7 weeks, and they said before the game that he would play between 25 and 35 minutes, and he got like I think 29. So they have to get him slowly back now. Slowly meaning that in the next game he will play, be in the starting 11, 100%. He will be in there. But as you saw, there was another blonde one with a ponytail, a striker who scored the goals. Wolf, and I agree with Shaq, was a good taking goal. A lot of one touches there. But this is, without Erling Haaland, not a big, big team. So they need him now at the end. I mean, I thought that maybe we'd have a look over the shoulders to see what Leverkusen were doing. And now we know what they were doing. They're losing the derby against Cologne at the end. And even worse for them, Florian Wirtz, one of the biggest talents of European football, one of the biggest talents in Germany, did his crucial ligament, which was a very sad news tonight.
Yeah, very much so. Meanwhile, Jan, it's interesting comments we heard from Laporte today, the Barcelona president, of course, asked about Haaland and seemed to back himself quite a lot away from any sort of chance of signing him in the summer. How do I say this? You were right.
Yeah, you can say unbelievable that I have I'm right then and again. But what you will see now at the end of, because we are coming into another stage where they will have to make a decision. And first of all, people think that this clause exists during the season. This is wrong. The clause is after the season. Now you just understand more how angry Erling Haaland was in that interview by us, when he said that, why are they bothering? I mean, they know they can't put pressure on me because what we know now, that he can wait after the season to tell them. But there is a good dialogue between the player and the club, so it's good for Dortmund as well to know this early. But what you will see now at the end, when Team Haaland kind of going down to maybe two, three teams, the other teams will start spinning. And we see that all the time now. They are putting out stories. It will probably be too expensive, or nobody will say no to Barcelona, and blah, 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 blah. So we're coming into the final stage now. There will be a couple of more episodes, and then we know how the murder is in this exciting series.
It's like The Bachelor, Shaka. I know you love The Bachelor. Who is going to get the final rose? We're kind of down to two, aren't we? Manchester City or Real Madrid, Jan?
Well, I said that England and Spain are the two most likable places that it will end up. And then we have the usual suspects. And I see now we're also in a stage now when journalists just bumps out name and look for them when they will say, we said it first. Well, I can say any club, and I will say that I'll be first. Mm. But I think it's more realistic now to, like I said 10 days ago, that is down to Manchester City and Real Madrid, I think will be the main contenders. But I also say that I don't think that is decided yet. And let's just see who will get the last, who will get the winner.
It's City, isn't it, Jan?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Nedham wants to know desperately.
Well, there is a lot of... I was with a Manchester City former striker today, Uwe Rösler, and he even tried to talk to former Manchester City midfielder Alfie Haaland.
Oh.
And nothing came out of that either. So that was Manchester City day in Signal Iduna Park. I stay away as the shy guy I am, of course.
Where do you stand on man buns, Jan? You could get one going, can you?
Say that again?
A man bun, like Wolf has.
Who? I'm not sure what you're talking about. I'm so gone. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Hello? Hello?
Next time, Jan. I think it'll look good.
Definitely.
Jan, thank you very much. Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd Spy, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's go back to our big game, shall we? Earlier today, Barcelona 4, Osasuna 0, exclusively here on ESPN+. Gemma Soler caught up with Charlie after the game.
You asked for intensity yesterday. Well, the team was intense. They take advantage of the chances they created. They move the ball well. I think they did almost everything right.
Yes, we play really well. One of the best games that since I'm here as a coach, so I'm very happy for the team because we are training really well. We put good intensity, good rhythm, very fast. We create many chances. We dominate 90 minutes totally. The team was really, really intense, so I'm very happy for all of them. So keep going like that. Very important 3 points because just Sevilla lost 2 points. The rest won their game, so it was a little bit pressure for us. So we are in a good way, I think.
You needed to create solutions because you've been struggling the last 2 games against defensive teams. I don't know which was the key that really succeeded today. Aubameyang was more on the box, or how do you manage it?
No, in a different ways to play. Ferran, for example, or Oba or Usman, in 1v1, they were really good. We create many chances going to space, attacking spaces really well. Really complete game. I'm really happy for the players, especially.
Do you think maybe today was the best game of Dembélé that you have been managing?
Yes, can be. Or the game against Athletic Bilbao, that he scored and he played 20 minutes, but today he played 90 minutes really well. So, yeah, he's improving also with the team.
You have a crazy week ahead of you, trip to Istanbul, difficult match, then El Clásico. How do you face these two very difficult games?
Well, we start a really difficult week with win, with 3 points, very important for us. And now we have to prepare very well against Galatasaray. They complicate us very much here at home, and the main target is first to go through in the Europa League, and then we will think about the Clásico.
Gemma joins us now. Gemma, your head's fine. Looking ahead to our Clásico, it's very, very different, isn't it, to when these two teams met earlier in the season, in the sense you've got Real Madrid coming with the momentum after that extraordinary comeback against PSG. Barcelona have come together beautifully over the last few weeks. This is going to be a brilliant game at the Bernabeu.
Hola, Dan. Yes, that will be a Clásico, not the thing we saw in the first leg where Barcelona were depressed. They were not still recovered from the Messi traumatic departure. They didn't have goal. They have a bunch of talented young players without experience. But there was a feeling of depression in all the team with Ronald Koeman. Everything was going wrong for the club. Now they killed it. I think we have to say it once again. Done in the winter transfer market. They really did good signings. They have goal and they had fun playing. The players had fun earlier today here. So it's another thing. And they will. We will see what happened in Istanbul. We'll see what happened against Galatasaray. But they will be, of course, much tired than Real Madrid. But we are talking about a different team. While Real Madrid will be at their best as well, because of course that amazing comeback against PSG gave them a lot of energy. They have the key players 100% fit. They have an amazing goalkeeper, a great killer in the area like Karim Benzema. So I think on ESPN Plus at this time next week, yep, we're going to be seeing, next Sunday we will be seeing a great show.
Gemma sums up quite nice. It's like almost that hangover, wasn't it, before going into this game at the Camp Nou. It's like there's no Messi. What's happened to all the stars in this tie? But obviously what has happened over the last few months just sets this up beautifully.
It really does. And what a turnaround ever since Xavi arrived at Barcelona and has gotten this team playing well, giving them an identity. And then the transfer window in January, where so many of those players come in, have made a significant impact. And now you have a Barcelona trending very much in the right direction, looking, enjoying their football and looking to give their fans more to celebrate. Real Madrid, they're going to win the title. That's no question. They have their sights firmly set on the Champions League. Will there be a little bit of a hangover after that PSG result? And as we all know, the Clásico just provides something different. Regardless of form, regardless of what else is going on, this one means an awful lot, especially given how flat the first one was.
Yeah, and it remains one of the biggest games in football.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. And I think the best thing about this one now is I think it's been a while since Barcelona have won one. But it seems going into this one, for as good as Real Madrid are, Barcelona have got that energy back. And I think in the past, that's the thing which you always wanted to see. Like, it's the two clubs, but there's two clubs in a good moment. So it's definitely going to be a game to watch.
So as Gemma said, of course, next Sunday will be Real Madrid against Barcelona from the Santiago Bernabeu. Coverage starts here on ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned though. Frank LaBeouf returns. Nadim and Shaq are alongside me as well, as they'll be answering some of your tweets for extra time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your questions. Nadim in the studio. How did that happen?
Listen, I was driving down the M6 and the next thing,
you're here.
I don't know, but I'm here nonetheless.
Oh, what a moment for us all. Are you going over to the Nichols for Shepherd's Pie?
To the what, sorry?
Steve Nichol, has he offered
you? He's not invited me yet.
Right.
He's not invited me yet.
I think you should just show up.
I don't know.
There'll definitely be Shepherd's Pie, whether you're there or not.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Frank is here as well. Let's talk about disappointment, Frank, shall we? Who has had the more disappointing career?
Ooh.
Neymar, by wasting his talent by going to PSG during his prime years, or Bale, wasting his prime years on the bench at Madrid?
Uh,
Well, I will go for Bale. I mean, it's been such a disappointment since he signed there. Yes, he scored good goals, and especially in Champions League, but it's like he decided to go in certain ways where he forgot football, where football didn't become something important to his life. I never thought that Neymar had something to do else than football. And I'm talking about golf, especially with Bale. But really, it was such a fantastic player, Bale, when he was playing for Spurs. When he came to Real Madrid, I was expecting so much from him. And nothing happened.
He did deliver, Frank. I think that's a bit harsh. He didn't go to Madrid and do nothing. He won Champions League titles with them and was a key part to them winning those titles.
Yeah, but I mean, you cannot only happy with that, with one performance in a final. We are talking about consistency when we talk about a player. And I don't want Bale's fans to be upset with me by the fact I'm critical towards him. I am because it's a waste. When you see him, don't tell me that you're happy with what he showed since he signed for Real Madrid. I think it's not enough even for himself. I feel frustrated when I see him on the bench with all the talent that he showed when he was playing for Spurs or for Wales.
That's a good question. And to Frank's point, listen, Bale's won Champions League, scored in Champions League finals, has been an integral part of Real Madrid. But then things come apart at the seams and he's just not featured or even seem interested in featuring for Real Madrid. The other side of the coin, though, is Neymar, who went to PSG by all accounts because he wanted to win the Ballon d'Or, to be a part of that project. Is this his second season that he's even featured this late in the competition because he's always injured? A couple of years ago it was COVID and they got to the final. So it depends on what you see as important, as whether we're talking about Bale, who's delivering some promise and then thought, right, that's it, I'm going to go play some golf, or Neymar, who has not delivered on what he was brought there to do, even though he's showed up in the league. As I mentioned, he's not showed up in the Champions League enough, in my opinion.
I need to start off by saying, we need to start up the question saying, who's had the most disappointing career? And you said, Ney. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be attacked. Like, what is going on? What type of question is this? But then it finishes, then Mar. I was like, oh gosh, that's a relief.
Just a given, isn't it?
I think if Gareth Bale was to stop playing for Real Madrid right now, I think he'd be happy with the titles that he has. But if you were to ask him to review his time and say, did he achieve his potential? I feel like he'd say no. Because I think the impact is, because he was bought for like £80 million pounds. Like, the only person that cost more at that point there was Ronaldo. So there was some sort of... No, he cost less, in fact. So the expectation was going to probably have some similar impact. But he didn't have that. Whether that's due to injuries, whether it's due to not fully settling in, you know, there's something to it. And as for the Neymar side of it at PSG, like, PSG weren't a million miles away from winning the Champions League final two seasons ago or whatever it was. So if he would have won something then, does that mean that the whole spell would have been successful? Like, he's been to that stage, so it hasn't been a complete waste overall. But I can hear the Bale fans are saying, "Oh, whatever." It's not been a waste because it's not over yet.
I think it's over.
I think Bale Madrid's over.
I think Neymar's over.
I think Bale Madrid's more over than Neymar is at PSG.
What should Paris do in the summer season to clear out this squad, Frank?
Wow. I guess. Lots of players leaving. I don't know if Neymar is going to leave, but you still have to work on the hierarchy and what's the chairman's going to do. Is he going to stay? Maybe the emir is going to be fed up and is going to name somebody else. Is Leonardo going to stay? If Zidane comes, is Wenger coming as well? You know, that's a possibility, and we talked about that. And for the players. Yeah, you have to change some personals because he didn't work with those players, and some players who been there for a while, really a while. And we were talking about that losing culture that you get. Those players show too much that they can't win the Champions League. And you cannot win the Champions League with them, therefore you have to get rid of them. Mm. And I'm not here, sorry, to mention some players, but you have to in order to go to another cycle and maybe win the Champions League one day.
Nato, I don't know why they've addressed this to you. How tough is it when your fans are against you?
Oh gosh, it's a hit job. It's a hit job.
And then you score an own goal, like Maguire did. How do you bounce back?
I've never done that. I've never done that when they've been against me. I've done lots of other things, but I've never done that.
Right.
But the Maguire thing's really interesting because, like, they really dislike him at the minute. I'm seeing, like, blooper reels and all sorts, people saying he's a mess, all this stuff. And he's actively trying to play his way into a position where people believe in him. But he's just not there. He's out of form. He's out of form. Nobody likes him and all this stuff. So that's a tough position to be in where people expect you to make mistakes now. But it's just a case of going back to the fundamentals. But unfortunately for him, that won't get you praise. It might just stop some of the criticism.
Right.
So he's in a very, very tough position, especially as captain, because now people essentially just want him out. But what are you going to say? Well, I'm just going to leave, because that just confirms that you also don't have the character, as well as not being good enough.
I like that you pointed to your arm then when you said...
the armband. You were on the left side, the armband.
Just to make sure. What's interesting in the stories that we've been hearing constantly about him and Ronaldo not getting on? I imagine that's a regular, isn't it, within a dressing room? Not everybody gets on, or is there...
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I think it's more so when you're not doing well.
Right.
Like, when you're winning, it doesn't matter that everybody's from a different place and has a different idea in terms of what football is, because you play to win, and when you win and everything's great, the only downside is, say, if you're not part of the side or whatever. But when things aren't going great, like, Ronaldo has more fans than, like, I think we can even contemplate.
I think more than Harry Maguire.
You would argue so, and he has a style of play which is more suited to the eye, to the, you know, to football purists and the like. That seems fair, yeah.
You're right.
So comparatively, Harry Maguire might have a big impact in United because he's been there for longer, but Ronaldo coming in brand new is still Ronaldo.
Sure.
So who's going to be signed to stick up for Harry when the battle could be against Cristiano Ronaldo? 804 goals, is it, in his career so far?
A lot.
So, yeah, it's a bit of an awkward situation, that one, but I'm sure he's going to try his best.
Frank, to that last point, how do you bounce back from... Even you as a World Cup winner, Frank, I'm sure you had a bad run. How do you bounce back from that?
I guess you believe in yourself. You think that if you reach that level, you're capable of getting back to where you were. It's about trusting yourself. It's about working hard. It's about maybe sometimes, you know, putting earpieces in your ears, and you don't listen to what people say. You don't read newspapers. You don't listen to the fans, and you only believe in yourself and work hard. That's the only way you can sort the problems out. For Harry Maguire or anybody else, it's all about confidences. I mean, I saw Maguire playing for Leicester, and I think he was absolutely fantastic. So it's why Manchester United signed him. He didn't come like in a lottery stuff, and he won the spot, you know, because he showed talent that is there, so he has to get back to that.
Is there any book that maybe you could recommend, Frank, that he could read to help him?
Well, I have a very good one, but it's not published in English yet. But I'm ready to translate just for Ari if needed.
Asking the guys tonight, after the performance...
Shaka, I will offer one to you too. Oh. Heads up, my friend. I will offer you
there
one
you
to
are, you. Shaq. Yeah.
I'm all right, Frank.
Shaka needs a lot of self-help.
Yeah, I'm good, Frank. I'm good, thanks.
Ask the guys tonight, after the performance from Arsenal, okay, do they stand a chance against Liverpool? And where will the game be won from?
What?
Do they say they're playing Liverpool midweek, Shaka?
Liverpool are going to win.
Right, no chance.
No chance.
Right.
So what's the second part?
Where will the game be won from?
From Liverpool.
it's at the Emirates, isn't it? Okay, so
today's the Sunday. So today's the Sunday, okay, Nedham. So we haven't got that far.
So I think Arsenal are at home. And they're playing well. They've got the crowd, and I've seen the crowd really have a big impact in terms of some of the performances that they have there. And they arrive at the game with a lot of confidence. So Liverpool are very, very good. And I think if Arsenal were in a down moment, then you say, yeah, it's a foregone conclusion. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. But I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool did manage to find a way to win, because they're in a good spot as well. But I think it makes for a better game, because Arsenal will have the belief that they can do it.
Yeah.
And people get right behind them. Like, which player in their team isn't playing well at this moment in time? Like, you've got people playing up front, moving the ball well, scoring goals. Midfielders are staying on the field. Midfielders are staying on the field, you know, no more red cards. Ben White's been one of the best signings. Yeah. Lanzel's been great. So, of course, they could win the game.
What odds you give me Arsenal finished third? I think that's a good bet, you know.
Well, not if they lose on Wednesday.
I don't think that's a good bet.
I think that's a good bet.
They've got to play Chelsea still.
Bet you a bag of gummy worms.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? I'm taking Arsenal finish third.
All right, I'll take that bet.
I really hope you're going to regret what you just said right now, Shaka, one day, you know, before the end of the season. Just smash my club, you know. But whatever.
Oh, Frank was
Are you upset because they won against Newcastle today? It's why you're upset.
Yeah, Shaka, your anti-Chelsea ways.
I just want some gummy worms.
That's what it is.
Frank, would Chelsea be more productive with a Conte-Kovacic midfield as both able to defend, attack and actually move around the pitch, unlike Jorginho, and their pace of game would surely improve?
That's a very good question, and it's very hard to answer to that because Jorginho...
No.
Oh.
The assist that he delivered to Havertz was absolutely fantastic. And you know at one point that Jorginho is capable of giving you fantastic passes and also can regulate the game when he has the ball. It was very hard today for him because Newcastle worked very hard to make sure that Jorginho couldn't get the ball when Chelsea was in possession of the ball. But I'm very fond of Kovacic and Kante, and that will be my two first choices. But I can't deny that Jorginho had a fantastic season, winning so many things that it's hard for the fans to understand that he's on the bench. It's a decision that Tuchel has to make, and that's the thing he has to do to rotate the players and make sure that the best can play. I have no problem with any of them because they are all three fantastic players.
Final question, Nadim, who's a better signing? Jack Grealish? Or Luis Diaz?
Who's better signing? I would say Diaz has had a quicker impact, but I can't necessarily say he's a better signing because it's so early in the season, nothing's been done yet.
Early in the season, quite late.
No, but like for Diaz, like he's been there, what is it, a month and a half?
He's had more of an impact than Jack Grealish has, though,
in the early stages,
that's
yeah.
That's a politician's answer I've ever heard of.
Well, you know, like.
I am Jack, impressive.
You know, listen, it's Manchester City TV.
I would say that Diaz immediately fits better into their system than Jack Grealish does for Man City.
Right.
I think Jack Grealish will get there, but Diaz is straight in, makes perfect.
Why is he struggling to get there?
Because he's never really had to play to that standard before. Whereas I think for Diaz, the systems and stuff like that in Porto are probably a bit more similar to, say, the way that he might do things at Liverpool. And you need your wingers to be running in behind without the ball, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's my answer. But, you know, there's still time.
How long are you here for? What's going on?
What do you mean?
Well, you're here tomorrow as well?
No, I'm not coming back here ever again.
It's a win-win.
You there you go, happy days there.
Where are you going after this?
You have to.
Well, I don't know, I'm just going to continue my tour across America, yeah?
Wow. What a treat.
Exactly.
That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Nadim won't be on tomorrow, but we'll try and get over it. We'll, of course, be reflecting on Mallorca against Real Madrid. Be sure to join us.